Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
crazy misperceptions you can have after having sort of a brain injury slash stroke or something like that. So I'm going to talk about that on this podcast, and I'm just going to, I suppose, give it a bit of an introduction to what the nature of the podcast is. So I have a little directional microphone, a dictaphone, and I speak into it while I'm walking. I'll give it a little bit of an explanation for why I'm walking, the entire story of it. So at the end of this podcast, I will just simply flick it into the USB port of the dictaphone into the computer. A program will detect that the dictaphone is there, grab the program, present it for listening. I might do several podcasts. Then I'll put a bit of commentary on it, click, and it's published to a podcast, server, a podcast hosting scheme, and onto Twitter and a few things like that. And so that's the story of what's actually happening here. The other story of why I'm doing it while walking is the overall thing of the cognitive development of actually walking along, and you have to do so much walking and so much podcasting. If you can actually push those two things together, you can start to get some of your cognitive activities together. Now, I can't really do that while I'm doing gym work, so mostly I've been going off off to the gym, so I've been doing less podcasting while walking. Now, what has happened is that while I've been doing it, I've slowly been improving the software to handle the sound files, and to handle the sort of the administration of it. And I've slowly been fiddling around with microphones. So I've had a lapel microphone which used to pick up myself, all the wind and all the traffic and everything going around. So eventually someone complained about it, I sort of sat back and researched it and found up across. So there's a little audience, say perhaps of 100 or so people overseas, mostly in Ukraine and some Germany, USA, tends to be the major ones. They tend to pick up podcasts on military issues, or I don't know what the actual preference is, but there is a general interest in cognitive rehab. So there's some 1,700 podcasts like this starting off. So if you want to, you go back to the blogger page. I think there's a blog page, Dr. Hill Science News, and you can go right back to actual physical written blogs. These are, I suppose, a podcast blog, so these are blogs with a podcast associated with it, but it's sort of just the way you have to do. You have to embed your podcast into a blog page, and the blog page gets syndicated on an RS a feeder. That's what I was looking for before. So that's the way that it goes. So I've just been gradually talking about various aspects of rehab. That's when I've got nothing else to speak about, or I've strained you over a huge length of time with me learning the periodic table. You can go back and listen to different attempts to learn the periodic table, or I've gone into the discussion of the different phases of developing software or programs or electronics or bits of chemistry as I've worked through them. For cognitive exercises, looked at a molecule, memorised the molecule, and then given a molecular tour of it. And it just goes to show for me that I can give a molecular tour one time, then after a few weeks or so, it fades. But just getting the general nuance across, and sort of it's sort of like building up in sort of the memory in layers. So I don't think it's necessarily cognitive rehab. It's just building the core the core memory to, I think actually a higher quality than it was before. You're probably going to hear a helicopter coming over the top. There's nothing I can do about that because it's actually flying through the actual capture radius of my microphone as it's going across. Now, the topic here is the weird and weird wonderful world of cognitive distortions, I suppose, after a brain insult. I think that's what the word you can say, a brain insult for it. As they peel away, other things sort of step in and step out. And it's not going to be too much in depth, but yeah, really your mind's a bit shattered after a stroke. Or for me, it's been in sort of parallel segments, which have been parallel programming, and they're operating in parallel, trying to work with each other, cross-talking, interfering with each other, making it rather hard. There's not much interest to slowness, but first off, it was very slow, and I could, like I was reading physics textbooks before the operations, but then afterwards I could only read a quarter of an article or a page or stuff like that, and try to keep information in from one end of the article to the other was really difficult. And just following on that one, I began reading an article, podcasting it, and then remembering what the article was, writing it up, and then writing a quiz. And I suppose I should say in general what I've done, writing a mobile phone quiz and various things. So I've broken it up in the podcast, such as capacity there for a simple quiz to be written up, and you have some multiple choice mobile phone questionnaire about it, just using some software about it. But all that's just to pull across, and that's just been hours and hours and hours. And so mostly I can sort of last sort of fading after an hour of reading an article and remembering, say, four or five articles to write them, to say what they were about. And it's, you know, quite a strain to actually remember it. And as so you slowly build that capacity over time. But and I suppose the interesting thing is that there's the endurance and tiredness going through. So this is a strange thing. It just does, pushing yourself does make yourself very tired to go across. I don't know, people seem to expect and know that, but that's sort of a bit of a surprise. Now, driving, let's go, you know, cognitive impairment, driving, what a nightmare. Now, when I first got in the car afterwards, I could, my maximum speed driving down the street for the first day or so was really, well, I don't know, about 30 kilometres an hour. And what would happen is that I'd be very conscious of the road rushing underneath. The things which I would automatically wipe out weren't being wiped out. So I was very conscious of the road coming in underneath. And then dirt on the windscreen. Of course, I'm just an Aussie bloke. I have a dirty windscreen. And and the dirt on that. And then over time, that disappeared. What happened is being very cautious, being aware. You check the third time, and then sit on the third time, and you go, oh my God, I have to check that much going across. And so fortunately I've sort of moving up, I've picked that out, and there's sort of the certain colours of cars I didn't see for a while. But overall, by just keeping your check level way, way ahead of anything, you can monitor if there's anything that you're you're missing. And so over a period of time. So that's really nothing unusual in terms of slowness or not. Oh, that's not very weird. Now, there's been actually a few weird things which coming across. Now, I should also say that the little bits have lifted bit by bit, like improved vision or improved hearing, which you didn't know you had. So it's not as though you're aware of it, but suddenly it's improved and it's you want to celebrate. Say, hey, this such and such happened, and it's what you're going on. You know, it's that sort of very. I don't know if you're in a positive frame of mind, and everyone else around you is in a negative frame of mind. It's even worse being positive. It's sort of like it's been insensitive being positive when you get these positive things happening. And then there's been this, I suppose, misperception. I seeing something, or A, not being able to, I suppose, taken a while, it's improved finding tools at different angles on the bench. Like if you put a tool at a slight for different angle or underneath a set of tools, initially that would be absolute nightmare and death. But now I probably think I'm probably better than I was before doing it. But that's a lot of practice, and this is in the other strand of cognitive rehab, and that's building and learning about circuits, Arduino circuits, and constructing things. I've got my little table on the patio with heaps of junk on it. I'm sort of pushed out of everything else. I've got my desk, which is a bit junky, and that's a bit junky, and the rest of that obviously have been excised. My junk has been excised or condensed or thrown out, or you know, and I can imagine that people look at, you know, weirdo down the street with heaps of rubbish, weirdo here, will sort of give a license to clean out. And so certain things have cleaned out, and sort of just memorizing of where the various components are, and I suppose the cabling, remembering the cabling or getting a mechanism to actually solder one thing at a time and test it. That's if you've got these problems. Now, the actual well, for a while I thought my skill of soldering was going down, but then my soldering iron fell about completely. I replaced it with another one. So there's things like that. Or just taking a bit of practice to strip wire such that they don't fail after a time. So you can actually go quite quickly, but then your prototypes fail, and it's failing because of poor workmanship. So that's a sort of a general cognitive stuff, but the stuff I wanted to talk about is the weirder stuff. Now, part of pushing along is, well, this agony of increasing typing speed. So initially your fingers are very fat, and then you start off, I suppose, up and going from 15 to 35, and I think the records are around 250 words per minute, up around there. You know, these people do it, and trying to pick out what the problems are, and stuff like that. So I've sort of gone up to 30 to 35 words per minute, and just trying to see where the errors are. I can't hard to work that out. So that's for a long time. And then what happens, frontier analysis, in terms of that, rather than just a single target, there's a target and duration, how many times you can hit a target in a row before you run out of energy. So there's sort of like two grades of target to go for. I was thinking, as I was typing, I said, hang on, I haven't noticed that before. That's a bit crap. That when you hit the wrong key, you hear this clicking sound from the keyboard. And hang on, how can that happen? I didn't know this. This is completely bizarre. I didn't know that your keyboard could make this very subtle click. I said, well, the sound of it as you're producing it, and you go along and you pick it up, and you pick the keyboard up, put your ear against it, but no, it sounds there sort of super odd. And then you're typing over a wire, and then you test it again two or three times. Once it's locked in, it's always there. Click, and it's sort of like, that is absolutely super weird, because it's not with the headphones or anything like that. It's not for the speakers. It's from the keyboard. Keyboards just don't do that. And of course, you figure out, oh, perhaps that's a misperception or an additional sort of micro perception, or called it by its scary name, hallucination, because people think hallucinations are sort of like the ghosts coming to a person who's actually committed a murder or something like that, but it's a misperception. And with those things, it's like, so how cool is that? That's absolutely fantastic. I wonder if it will keep on going. That's perhaps the genie thing to say at the moment. I wonder if that will keep on going. Once you've worked out that it's a misperception, it disappears. And I'll go again. Maybe one day I'll see it again. Now, the other sort of weird things, so rather than being scary, these are all weird things. So I was in separate story in Canberra, going to a Monet exhibition by myself on Father's Day. Everybody else said, "We don't want to do that, we'll go off shopping." And here I was by myself on Father's Day at the Monet exhibition, because that was a gift to me. I didn't have to go shopping, and I could go and look at that. And Monet was, I suppose, very interesting to me. Several things I didn't realise was where the Havre was. That's the actual exit into the where the Seine meets some point, I suppose, up in the English Channel, that area there. And Monet is from Barbizon. And look, I really didn't really pick up the history of where he was in the situation. However, as a kid, I spent about a year in Fontainebleau in France, in the King's Forest there. And when I went back there, let's go for a bush walk from Fontainebleau to Barbizon. And so, just to give you sort of an idea, this is one of the big national forests in France, and it's probably the area the size of Glenbrook. It's sort of like just such a small handkerchief of it, and it's crossed by freeways. So so this is a bit hard. But so it was there, and as I was looking at it, I thought, oh, that is, there was a sort of industrial harbour scene. And I thought, well, that woman next to me, that's a pretty unusual perfume, because that's actually quite revolting. That smells like mud, sort of wet sea mud and stuff like that. And went over and what could I smell? And then another person had pretty much the same perfume on. And then there was a went over to a I suppose it was a more wooded scene. You probably can guess what's happening here. And indeed, that sitting up, person's deodorant, I thought, was, oh, that's smelling a bit bit woody, but it's pretty amazing because it smells just like Barbizon and stuff like that. So the same sort of person came up next to me, and the smell had changed. I just couldn't work what was going off. And then I checked another painting. This is a bizarre thing. Like, how cool is that? I began to work out that the actual visual stimulation, whatever it was, of the paintings in the time with the memories, stuff like that, actually stimulated an actual scent. How amazing is that? Of course, after a short while it went away, but there's really no one to talk to, because you can't say, oh, have you had this crazy stuff? And that was crazy, and I thought it was sort of a cosmic thing in terms of that something that's happened. It's not happened, but it has happened within your brain space, and it's been an experience, and it's like a legitimate experience, the clicking, the brain space and stuff like that. Now experiencing numbers as colors, or more like equations with colours. Like, so previously I would very much have this sort of, if an equation was good, correct, it would have a green, yellow, sort of like a glow around some of the equal signs and numbers. Or if there was a mistake in a column of figures, there would be sort of a slight darkness around one of the figures, so I could just put my finger on that and say, well, that's that. So I had that before, and sort of having a little bit of that come back, I suppose, maybe something. That's just weird, and I really haven't ever sort of noticed. I've been a friend to that thought when I'm thinking through equations and stuff like that, but you know, I haven't spoken to anybody. It was only by chance that I said, "Oh, it's different." And when I said it's different, there was that's a curious thing. And I think that's the general guy that's curious. However, something more weird has happened is doing brain training, and it's sort of like Brain HQ, and I sort of agree with some of the people listening to me on this, it is really the Disney cartoon. You know, if brain training on computers is like trying to study university physics or university level stuff by doing watching Saturday cartoons, you might pick up something, but it's more for the laugh and the pick, and it's the cartoons always have a hook to keep you watching it and stuff like that. But there's very little content or value in it, but it certainly does keep you going, and you does train certain memory skills, and then you use you certain graphs. And now, of course, the graphs are always ones which say, blood oath, I want to spend more money on this. This is really helping. And so you're always a bit aware of it. But they do pull things up. And the unusual thing is that what would happen is that I would see, I don't know, they would have a series of six jellyfish floating in the sea, or bubbles floating in the sea, or fish floating in the sea, and they'd move around and they'd pop where it is, and then you'd have to actually after they moved around. Now obviously this is a bit of a hell thing, because I do this brain training while on a treadmill. The similar to this is walking while podcasting, treadmill while brain thing. At least you're doing two fairly dubious things to get better, but you're spending effectively half the time doing it. Now on the walker, their commuters are not the best. They just don't have the power, and so at a certain point in time, it's getting down to under 100 milliseconds flash time, it's really potluck. You get what you get, and you say, what I'll do is I'll just increase the speed and length of my running and the angle of running, so I'm more exhausted. So you slow yourself down, or try and do it like that. So the other attitude is that, it would be nice in a world where I could say, hey, upgrade these machines for me, don't hold me back. But although there's this courteous, oh yes, you're great, you're welcome, it really is they have their idea of their model 23-year-old, Arnold Schwarzenegger person coming in, who by flexing his muscles make everyone go, ooh, aha, I want to go to the gym. Not someone saying, oh, I've improved cognitively, oh, I'll go to the gym. So you can sort of understand that. So what happens with these objects which track is that they go far, but after a certain amount of time they jump, and the entire thing is, I don't know whether that's the software, but I don't think it is. It's just crappy computers. So they jump, and when they jump, it really is your brain goes, fuck, and it's a bit pop luck, and it goes like that, and puts you back, and it's really rather bad when that happens. However, what happens is that the other objects, so you have, say, 6 objects to do, and another 12 objects, or, I don't know, 14 objects come up and start to move, and they fade in, so you can see the brain actually, it looks at where it is. And what had happened to me is that the objects would go to a certain point, and then the original objects would increase in brightness around them, and so that's reasonable, and then the brightness would fade after a while, and then you'd pick them, but then eventually the brightness was staying right up to when you picked them. And so it was just ridiculously easy. Then I realised that this software is completely crap. How could it be that easy after a while? Especially, it does not make sense. Of course, then I realised that there was a bit of a... that was perception brain doing it. Things would flash so quickly I would not be able to see it whatsoever, and I would just randomly hit a blank piece of screen, it would be tend to be correct. So these are things were happening now more. So in general, I now know doing it, or they have this sort of double decision thing happening. We've got two different types of cars, and a big sort of splodge of different symbols, and you have to hit the Route 66 symbol each time. Now, what had happened is that after a certain speed, the only symbol occurring up there and this is really bad software, is the 66 symbol. All the other symbols just have disappeared. And of course, I don't know whether that's a disparate brain or misperception. As these things happen, you get a bit of cross wiring from time to time. Another strange thing is listening to music. When you're listening to music in a film and there's a key change, I think this is probably normal with people, I'm not sure, is this tingling sensation which goes through you. So you've got all those weird things, and it's sort of, I think probably three phases. One is the incredible digging your fingernails in cognitive slowness as that lifts for a while. And then there's obviously a few tricks which come in for a short while, disappear. Some of them, some are quite tricky. And I don't find them distressing. They're quite nice to... Not quite nice. It's sort of... because no one's asking you about it. No one really cares what you're doing. And like you're on your own journey. The fact that you've sort of wandered off cognitively in the wrong direction for a little while, come back, and it's sort of like... It's like, how cool is that? How amazing is that? And it's of no relevance in the universe, but it is sort of like a valid life experience, even though it really hasn't happened. That's a bit weird, but if I think that's probably one of the problems with human relationships, it's all based on, has this actually happened? Have you actually done that? Or because everything, all the transactions in life tend to be, has it or hasn't happened? Otherwise, I'm not paying you. But this is sort of like weird. It's sort of beyond that. So that's the end of that podcast, and I hope that's been enjoyable. I just have a little look at the amount of time that I've gone speaking on that. I've spent for 32 minutes. How about that? I don't expect you to listen to it. Thanks a lot.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.